Hello, everybody. I'm Lou Dobbs, and this is The Great America Show. Welcome. The Manhattan DA, Alvin Bragg, is despised, of course, in MAGA world. And his efforts to prosecute Donald Trump may have just blown up in a New York courtroom. One honest man, attorney Robert Costello, testifying against Michael Cohen, who is the star witness in Bragg's persecution of President Trump. Costello revealed that Bragg had, in effect, hidden evidence that undercut Michael Cohen's testimony against the former president. And Bragg himself, according to some legal experts now, may be in legal jeopardy. At any rate, Cohen made no appearance to rebut Costello's testimony, and Bragg halted further proceedings of the grand jury. For what reason, we don't really know. Some say Bragg has a mutiny among the assistant district attorneys in his office, and they think that he has too weak of a case to proceed. Bragg could be retreating in his reckless decision to go after a former president, or perhaps he's simply assessing next steps as he pursues yet another attack on Trump in what has been 7 years of unrelenting and baseless Marxist dim political persecution of the former president. Also, the Daily Mail in possession of a letter that seems to show Michael Cohen admitting that President Trump never gave him any money for the money Cohen gave Stormy Daniels, a porno star. Meanwhile, DeSantis sinks further in the polls, Trump with a commanding lead, despite the Marxist Dems' legal assault from three cases they brought in New York alone, one case as well in Florida, another in Georgia. You'd think there'd be enough honest attorneys and judges and lawyers in this country to stop the Marxist attacks on President Trump after 7 long years. But folks, to this point, there aren't. Not in the American Bar Association, not in the prosecutor's office or the major law firms. And in Moscow, President Xi Jinping wrapping up his visit with Vladimir Putin. The two totalitarian rulers renewing their strategic partnership, Xi vowing to preside over an anti-American, anti-European world order, and to be, at the same time, a peace broker between Russia and Ukraine. As would be expected, Putin agreed. And unexpectedly, President Biden immediately welcomed Xi's efforts to broker an end to the more than year-long war that Russia began with its invasion of Ukraine on February 24 of last year. Xi is expanding his influence and China's power all around the globe. A month ago, surprising the world by bringing Saudi Arabia and Iran together in an alliance. What's next? Our guest today is Russ Tice. Russ was a National Security Agency intelligence analyst for almost 20 years, a Sino-Russia expert as well, and a whistleblower once he found out that the NSA was spying on American citizens. Russ, great to have you back with us. This is our third discussion now as we explore and survey the surveillance state that America has become. Let's start with your reaction to what seems to be another successful extension of Chinese power that's challenging the United States and Europe all around the world.
It sort of looks like that in the past where the United States has been sort of the premier arbiter of disagreements around the world and that everyone looked to us for leadership. If you look at the Arab Accords with President Trump, that now our leadership is no longer deemed to be credible or viable or competent, and that now the world is looking elsewhere. And unfortunately, that elsewhere may be Communist China.
And it looks as though Communist China is set to continue on this path to domination. Xi Jinping is to be into Moscow to talk with Vladimir Putin, as I understand it, next week. And at the top of those discussions will be their strategic partnership and, of course, the war, Russia's war on Ukraine. Your thoughts about what would happen in terms of superpower dominance here if Xi Jinping were to roll off another major diplomatic victory, such as resolving at least a truce between Ukraine and Russia?
So far, the warmongers amongst us in Congress have been saying that there cannot be an arbiter, a peace, that it, we have, there has to be victory at all costs. Yet they're not willing to define what victory is. Is victory another 100,000 Ukrainians dead? Is, you know, or 200,000 or 300,000 more? What is the definition of victory? To me, it's just plain silly. And apparently, there's another. You know, the world sees that we're giving them over $100 billion of munitions and or Lord knows how much money and how much of that is ending up in Zelensky's bank account in Zurich, Switzerland, because of the corruption that they're well known for. The world is turning to China, and China is showing that that they're willing to step up and make us look foolish in our stupidity.
And this administration has been enormously helpful in that effort, including, as you alluded to, what we're doing with Ukraine. And we have heard now just the announcement that the White House will not send F-16 fighter jets to Ukraine. And it's curious what that might portend. We know the battle is intense in eastern Ukraine in the Donetsk region and Donbass. This is a moment where it looks like there is a possibility of a roll-up on the part of the Russians of the Ukrainian forces, at least in the eastern part of the country. What happens, we will see, but this does not look good right now for the Ukrainians. And yet, we don't hear anything from President Biden. We don't hear anything from Jake Sullivan, his national security advisor. Suddenly, Tony Blinken is not available for photo ops. And again, the foreign policy team and national security team of the Biden regime has gone radio silent and also invisible. We'll see what this all means, but certainly the question has to be asked, to what degree right now our intelligence agencies have failed either the national security team and the diplomatic team represented by the Secretary of State, the national security advisor, and the president himself? Is this a failure of leadership and policy on their part singularly, or is there also some relationship to the national security intelligence services and agencies? Your thoughts?
I would certainly hope that NSA and our CIA are still doing their job overseas, aside from their new job to spy domestically on Americans, that they're providing intelligence on what's happening in the Ukraine, the Crimea, and the Donbass, and the surrounding area. I know if I was still in the business, I'd be spending probably an awful lot of time with my satellites right now looking at all these things. I believe this is probably a failure in leadership. They're probably being told that of what's going on, the massing of troops by the Russians. And up until now, the Russians have been fighting this with one hand tied behind their back. And I think they're getting ready to unleash their full force. In a Clausewitz sort of manner, because they're tired of dealing with having their troops sniped on and some of the issues that have happened so far with their losses, and I think they want this to be over in a grand way. And they have resources; they can bring in their troops from Siberia. They have the ability to put mass, and at this point, and I think there's a lot of the losses that the Ukrainians are suffering are being hidden by our press and by the State Department and the military and the intelligence community. So in that respect, our intelligence community is keeping their mouth shut. They're probably telling the leadership what's going on, but the leadership is still full-fledged, nads to the wall on what's going on here, and you got to wonder if it's not the war profiteers that are driving the show on this particular thing, because they're probably making billions of dollars supplying these.
One of the sad consequences of war always is that the profiteers are both motivated toward war, and certainly it is the only group of people who benefit generally from these conflicts. Let's turn now to, you mentioned the domestic operations of the NSA, the other intelligence agencies, and it's striking because one doesn't until of late think of the domestic operations of the NSA or the CIA or any number of agencies. But suddenly we see their footprints and their tracks almost everywhere, and certainly in politics. The suggestion that Leon Panetta made last week that Donald Trump would be a national security disaster, let's hear his reasoning as he talks about Trump and his prospects in 2024.
I believe that his whole first America first approach to foreign policy, his desire to essentially withdraw from the world in terms of a leadership position for the United States would be devastating to our foreign policy at this point in time in the 21st century. Look, in the end, I really believe that he's a loser. And that even if he gets the nomination, he will lose. But the mere fact that he would be nominated by the Republican Party would be a scary step in the 21st century.
A scary step in the 21st century. I don't know that Leon Panetta has considered whether or not 2016 through 2020 was in the 21st century. This president turned out to be the best in modern history, including the 20th century. Your reaction to the idea of national security, presidential politics, and a clear statement by a former national security official himself, Leon Panetta, talking about a president who would be a disaster. That is a very provocative statement coming from him. Do you suppose there's an implicit threat in that?
It sounds like fear-mongering to me. They're trying to scare people into thinking that President Trump would be some kind of loose cannon with the nuclear football in his hand. I wonder if he realizes that Mr. Trump has already been president of the United States for 4 years. We did not enter a war. As a matter of fact, he started reducing the war, and he took down the ISIS in northern Syria, and the peace accords that happened between Israel and the Arab states. I just don't understand. I think he must think that people don't understand, that they've forgotten everything that Trump has done when he was in office.
Well, this
and
is
they're going to put this label on him that he's basically some warmonger that wants to bring us all to our ruin, when his side of the fence are marching towards a nuclear conflict with Russia. It makes no sense to me how anyone could buy this nonsense.
Except this is part of what look like and sound like and feel like psychological operations on the part of the Democratic Party and their president, who with the Senate right now are in control of the federal government. This is bizarre because, as you say, here was a president who was withdrawing our troops from abroad, who was refusing to get into police wars, who absolutely insisted on America first policies and foreign policy as well as economic policy, and it succeeded for 4 years and a bit beyond until Biden could take control. This is a remarkable statement to me. And frankly, it concerns me that here he is talking about national security, Leon Panetta, one of the deans of the Democrat Party, talking in absolute opposition to the reality, as you pointed out, a history that shows what a terrific, what a great president Mr. Trump was. So is there a role here for intelligence agencies? Why is this under discussion, do you suppose?
Well, obviously, you know, these nihilists are gaslighting the American people. A role domestically for our intelligence services, especially NSA and CIA, is to keep our hands off of domestic politics. They should have nothing to say in this. We shouldn't be affording one party or another access to the communications of their adversaries. It's all hands off. Our job is to let the American people decide who they want as president of the United States and ultimately provide that president with the best intelligence so that the president can make the best choices, you know, for foreign policy and for ultimately the national security of the country. So in that respect, you know, this whole thing is basically a psychological operation on the part of Mr. Panetta and his ilk to throw the wool over our eyes as far as Mr. Trump having no possibility of winning. I think I mentioned in the past, I haven't been to one of Mr. Trump's rallies. You know, I kind of like to go to one. My wife certainly wants to go to one. But I seem to think that even in Podunk Nowhere, out in the middle of flyover country, 30,000 people will show up to see the president, President Trump. So, you know, this is just silly nonsense that these people are trying to throw out there.
So this silly nonsense in this case from Leon Panetta, just to remind everyone, when I talked about his role in the national security apparatus, it includes being the Secretary of Defense as well as the Director of the CIA. You would think that there would be specific constraints that he would follow, at least, so as to avoid any confusion. But we now know that, you know, 51 CIA, five former CIA directors participated in the famous letter of 51 intelligence veterans who dismissed the Hunter laptop as Russian disinformation. Intervention in an election by the intelligence services, straightforwardly. Your thoughts?
Well, of course, that was done to influence the election and to make sure that the American people believed that the Hunter laptop issue was something that was a Russian plot or a Russian plant to have President Trump elected. Interesting, you know, the one fellow on that list that was both the former director of NSA and became the director of CIA was the guy that I tangled with and ultimately got fired by at NSA. It was Michael Hayden. Ultimately, you know, and he, matter of fact, he was made a director of CIA when he was still in uniform, when normally the director of CIA is a civilian, not a military officer. So, you know, his reward for his domestic spying under the Bush administration was to be promoted to a four-star general and to be made head of CIA. And back in those days, the head of CIA was basically considered the head of the entire intelligence community. So the devil pays well.
The devil does pay well. And in this case, the devil was very active in the 2020 election. The intervention that I was talking about, we've seen that from the FBI National Security Division. We have watched this, the attorneys general of the Biden administration, as well as the attorney general under Donald Trump. They have had significant influence over elections, bar more than certainly Merrick Garland, but still involvement. And to think that you, as a whistleblower, were retaliated against by the NSA. You were actually, I think this is accurate, the first NSA whistleblower. And you stepped forward in 2005 to make certain that the American people knew that our intelligence agencies, and specifically the NSA, were wiretapping, surveilling American citizens. Tell us about what motivated you at that moment to bring that to the public's attention. And by the way, again, thank you for doing so.
Well, thank you for that. Ultimately, I'd found out what was going on in late 2002 and early 2003. We were fighting the war. I spent a lot of time at the agency, and I found out by accident that this was going on. Basically, I was working a black operation, a black op, and I needed support, intelligence support, and I contacted an NSA element and found out that domestic spying was going on via our satellite capabilities. Then ultimately from there, I contacted some of my friends at the fort, or NSA, and they told me, Russ, this is far worse than just your angle of this. And then they brought in the domestic side as far as the RF communications that are done via a microwave, and as well as our fiber optics communications that basically run our entire communications for domestically. And then we realized this thing was all-inclusive, and that's when I was like, oh, my goodness. I ultimately made a call to that same unit that I talked to try to pin this down after things were winding down with the war, and I believe NSA security office listened in on that phone conversation immediately after that. I was called in for an emergency psychological evaluation, and ultimately this was them telling me that we know what you've done. We know.
What had you done at that point?
What had I done? I'd found out that they were violating the law and the Constitution.
Had you also talked to news outlets?
Not at that point, no.
Right.
Not at that point. So then they suspended my security clearance, and they sent me to the motor pool driving NSA vehicles to be repaired or what have you, which was my punishment.
This is what they did. The top officials of the National Security Agency to one of their most outstanding senior intelligence analysts sent
this
you
was
to the motor pool?
To the motor pool. This is basically them telling me, we expect you to pay your penance and to grovel to get your job back and keep your mouth shut and never mention a word of what you've learned, and we'll let you keep your big-time job and your big salary, and everything will be fine. Just keep your mouth shut and go along. So as long as basically pay my penance and keep my mouth shut, and I tell you, Lou, and there was a period of time where you got to wake up and look at yourself in the mirror, and at some point you don't like what you see when your mouth is still shut. Ultimately, the trigger, the catalyst for my coming out was one February day when we got a bunch of snow, and at the motor pool they said, they gave me a sweeper and said, go wipe the snow off of like 200 vehicles. I kind of blew up, and I said no, and I said, oh, by the way, I'm going to the press. I told them right up front. And that's what the trigger, and that was in February of 2004. So I'd like to say it was some altruistic, thing that ultimately sparked my going to the press. But in truth, it was my being just plain pissed off.
Well, they insulted you. They did everything they could to anger you, and they succeeded. And to see that kind of pettiness and arrogance on the part of senior leadership in the National Security Agency or any other agency of this government, I can't imagine anyone, worth their salt putting up with it. And the idea that they were doing that to you, this interests me a lot, because that means they didn't think very highly of their people if they thought you were the kind of people, as patriots serving the United States government, who would put up with that kind of an insult. It's extraordinary. But then again, these are people who had decided that irrespective of the Constitution and the laws of the United States, they could spy on American citizens, aren't they?
They are. Ironically, a lot of folks at NSA some of them are just plain geniuses. They are, their heads are, I mean, Einstein in the clouds. But one of the jokes at NSA is that how do you tell an introvert at NSA? An introvert is someone, when he talks to you, he looks at your shoes instead of his own shoes.
That's great.
It's kind of true that these very bright people, but they're not the hard charging, tiger type folks. As a matter of fact, in one of my very early psyche vows, one of the cautionary almost asterisks that they put under my psychological evaluation. And this is before they did their Russ has got to be crazy nonsense. Was they put in there that he's a black and white thinker, and he has an aggressive personality. That's one thing that made me a good intelligence analyst, because I would start digging into something. And intelligence analysis is sort of something where you get pieces to a puzzle, and sometimes the opposition is throwing you little pieces of the puzzle that are wrong or are the wrong shape to throw you off. And you've got to look at this mosaic of pieces of puzzle where you only maybe have 10% or less of the puzzle, and you have pieces that are there to throw you off, and you have to put the picture together and do your analysis. So you have to be aggressive in getting the information you need to come up with the information that you need to support your president. So ultimately, and all the money that they spent on my education and all the Intel courses that I took, I think I sent you a copy of my resume, which are just some of the, and remember, all those government courses that I took were paid for by the U.S. taxpayer. So they're creating a very, and I was a very good analyst. So the American people invested in me to do my job. And I thought I was doing a good, a good job for the American people, and they could have cared less by saying, okay, for a period of time, you're not going to do your job. You're going to be gassing up cars at the motor pool while you pay your pens. And during that whole time, someone's not doing my job.
It's just absurd that they would behave in such a way managerially and on a human level. Let's turn to this business of the NSA. Effectively, the NSA is the foundation of all the other intelligence agencies when it comes to signals intelligence, correct?
That's correct. So when all these other agencies are going to get their information on if it's Carter Page or whoever they're going after, they immediately will search NSA's database for the communications of said person, and then they'll go, two or three levels down to see who that person, who Carter Page has talked to, and ultimately go after them. Now, I bet you once or twice Mr. Page has talked to the president, former president, President Trump. That means President Trump is now put on the list of targeted individuals. So that's how insidious this becomes. And not only that, but they use that same information to go after anybody else. Like the January 6th situation a couple years ago, I bet all those people, they've gone to the NSA's database and gone back for each one of those citizens to find out what their communications were word for word over the past so many years to be able to throw against them. Then ultimately, now they can't bring that up in court, but what they do is what's called parallel construction, where that's the base information, then they try to bring something from that information, and they put up a veil of how they ultimately found the information. Basically, they lie in court when they come up with this information, because it was done unconstitutionally.
Well, the FBI was lying through the FISA court process itself, which was set up to prevent precisely this, that is, spying on American citizens without a court warrant. Eventually, it turns out that was an absolute artifice that didn't work and was abused throughout by both the court system itself and the FBI. When I say the court system itself, I'm talking about the judges who simply accepted by rote what was put in front of them, rubber stamped it, which meant there was really no protection whatsoever for the rights of our citizens. And that goes on, you think, today, despite all that has happened?
Absolutely. There have been abuses over and over again, and the FISA court ultimately, at first, everything that, their decisions were secret. So we didn't even know until some of the stuff after Edward Snowden came out that they leaked a little bit out. But the FISA court, you have to understand how there's no pushback for the FISA court. They don't have their own investigators to go into the different agencies to find out whether they're being lied to. The FISA court ultimately has become, I like using the analogy of a monkey in a black robe with a rubber stamp. And ultimately, a piece of paper flops in front of the monkey. And it used to be the only thing the monkey could do was to see a name and a body of text. They couldn't read the body of text. And then ultimately, they'd stamp approved. And once a little bell would go off, a banana chip would roll down. The monkey pops the banana chip in his mouth, and everyone claps, and then the next piece of paper plops in. Now, the FISA court is a blind monkey. With the papers flopping in. Now he doesn't even see the name, doesn't see it by it, just stamps it and gets his banana chip. That's the FISA court today. Ultimately, the archetype for all this goes back even beyond W. Bush with the FBI's national security letters, where they just come up to some business and say, we want all the information on this person, and here's a national security letter. And in the national security letter, it would say, you cannot say a word to anyone that we've given you this order to give all your information that you know on this targeted individual. So that happened even before 9/11. So once the Patriot Act happened, it was just sort of a jump up from what they were doing in the past.
Well, obviously, we're looking at a renewal of the surveillance sections 702 already. That is already underway, the preparations for it. The likelihood is it will be rubber stamped by this Congress. I hope that is not the case. Section 215. Give us your judgment about those two sections, their impact on the rights of American citizens, and the ability of the NSA to surveil and to disseminate the intelligence that they gather.
Well, I think the first one was Section 215 under the Patriot Act, where they brought up this, that they were allowed to go after, quote, tangible things. Well, a tangible thing could be anything, ultimately, and their provocation to go after tangible things was relevance. Well, the Fourth Amendment says it's not relevance, it's probable cause. And ultimately, if you have probable cause, you need to get a warrant before you get any information on people. So the Patriot Act from the very beginning was just an affront to our Constitution. Then comes 702, which now means that they can do internal collections, what's called upstream and downstream collections. So in the upstream, you get the to and the from, and from the downstream, you get the to, from, and about. So whoever you target. So they're right. Covering basically everything. And like I said the last time, it doesn't matter, whether 702 is basically sunsetted or not. NSA is going to spy and collect everything word for word on every American citizen because they've never been held accountable.
And 215, what do you think should be the disposition of the Congress?
Well, I think the entire Patriot Act needs to be revoked. It's an affront. I understand it was done in fear after the attacks of 9/11. As far as I know, it hasn't been taken out of the Patriot Act. So that tangible things designator still exists, which means everything. And we're not talking about we're talking about literally they could sneak into your house and look through it when you were on vacation and look through everything in your house, and you wouldn't have a clue, just as if you were a spy from the People's Republic of China. So, and take pictures or whatever of anything you have. They can look into your bank account, your credit card purchases, you know, who you date, everything you do, how much gasoline you use in your car, your odometer, ultimately turn on the emergency thing in your car that even when you don't have, you haven't paid to have that thing on.
So the question arises, Russ, all of that of the citizen. But why is there any question then if the NSA and our intelligence agencies and our national security agencies, our law enforcement agencies, have this capacity? Why is there any discussion about what has happened? Why could the NSA not give us an accounting, for example, on how the vote went in Pennsylvania, or what is going on that we didn't have advance notice of the invasion of Ukraine? Or if we did, what was the reasoning and communication amongst the relevant agencies, departments, and individuals in our national intelligence and national security teams to have permitted that war to begin with? Why is it that there would not be certain knowledge of what was happening? Because if we can get everything, including tangible intelligence, why could we not have almost an immediate forensic investigation of elections to verify them? Why could this not be turned to positive use? And or should we just simply assume that the intelligence agencies themselves were used to intervene in elections?
Well, I think you already know the answer to that, Lou. Of course, they apparently were turned against a certain element that they decided was not to their advantage to have in power. NSA does have that information. NSA has all those 30,000 emails that were deleted by Hillary Clinton. They have all this information that on these different people. And they're going to use it to their advantage, I believe, to blackmail people to make sure that the deep state cabal that they run is going to stay in power. You know, one of the things, one of the papers that I ran across where I realized NSA was targeting all these important people. They targeted the Supreme Court, Congress, the FISA court, all kinds of bigwig industrials, law firms, lawyers, the press. NSA was targeting all these individuals way back in 2002, 2003, 2004 timeframe. Like I mentioned previously, when Barack Obama was running for Senate, NSA started tapping into all his communications in 2004 before he became president. Another a list of numbers associated with an individual was Samuel Alito before he became a justice of the Supreme Court. So they knew that he was being considered, and then they wiretapped everything that Samuel Alito was doing. Well, why would they do that? The obvious answer is for blackmail, and obviously what they're doing with all this information is to, just like J. Edgar Hoover did, is to use it to their own advantage and to make sure that the dollars keep pumping into the intelligence community and ultimately the lifeblood of what we now know as the deep state.
You know, we're going to bear down on much of this and drill down on much of this as we continue our conversation over the coming weeks, Russ. But I think most people don't understand that, as you said, as we began this conversation in the previous episode, that the NSA has a record of every electronic transaction and communication ever made by any citizen. Is that a fair statement, summation of what you said?
At first, at the beginning, they could only get metadata for everybody, and then they would target people like they were targeting Barack Obama, the Congress, Supreme Court. Then in those, and when they would target someone, they could get everything, and they were. But they couldn't do every communication. You know, like little Jenny talking to Julie about how cute Johnny is in middle school. You know, most people, you know, don't care about that communication. But today, NSA is even getting that little conversation about how cute Johnny is. So it's everything that's being done right now. And that started happening when they opened up that facility. And this was all done quietly. And that was December of 2012 is when that facility in Bluffdale, Utah, was opened up to be able to store a huge storage facility, over a million square feet of storage, of computer storage space. When that was opened up, it meant everything is going to be stored, every word for word, every communication in perpetuity.
Well, that is sobering as well as alarming, and it is fascinating. And that's going to be the subject of our next discussion. Russ, we appreciate everything that you've done for the country. As you worked for the NSA, we appreciate everything you did as a whistleblower and your perspectives on life since then and what we are looking at now and witnessing in this country as we are coming to terms in many cases with the American people being the enemies designated by the agencies of our federal government as enemies of the government. We're going to look into that, the weaponization of our government against American citizens, as we continue the conversation. Russ Tice, as always, God bless you, and thanks so much.
Well, thanks for having me on, Lou.
Russ Tice. We'll be talking with Russ each week to assess national security issues around the world and their influence on America. Here tomorrow, please be with us, the Gateway Pundit's Jim Hoff. Please join us. Till then, God bless you, and God bless America.